This is the Winchester Talking newspaper for the week ending the 19th of February 2016. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 19th of February 2016. And this week the editors were Bill Argles, Irene Dowding and Jean Gardner. And your readers today are Shirley Parnell.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I am your presenter, Roy Faithful. The main headlines this week are: cubicle pervert is spared jail term, GPs consult on branch closure, and support worker jailed. So may we have the story behind the first headline, Shirley?
Cubicle pervert is spared jail term. A peeping Tom has avoided prison after admitting voyeurism at Winchester's main leisure centre. Stephen Humphreys, 49, a regular churchgoer, was spotted looking under a cubicle at a mixed-sex changing room at the River Park Leisure Centre. A doctor, who was changing there with his wife and two-year-old daughter, gave chase to Humphreys and detained him. Humphreys broke free and fled on foot, but was arrested shortly afterwards by police on September the 5th, 2014, Winchester Crown Court heard. Humphreys of Hinkler Road, Thornhill, admitted one count of voyeurism and asked for two other similar offences to be taken into consideration. Barry McElduff, prosecuting, said the other earlier instances he had used a mobile phone to film either under or over a cubicle at the same leisure centre. On February the 6th, 2014, when a mother was changing with her one-year-old daughter, and on August 31st, when a mother was there with her 11-year-old son. Both times, Humphreys left before he could be detained. Humphreys also admitted eight counts of making indecent images of children, found by police on his home computer. In total, there were 165 indecent images, some involving bestiality. Mr. McElduff added, "The way he has committed crimes has changed. He's moved from the internet, where some sexual offenders seem to think things are not real. He now goes out to seek people in real life. There's a risk it could manifest as something more serious." Timothy Ackers, mitigating, said, "Father of five, Humphreys, had lost his marriage, his home, as well as his job, and is now unemployed." The court heard that Humphreys was a previous good character. He received an emotionally stunted upbringing. He attended a Roman Catholic boarding school, which left him sexually repressed. Many people attend those schools and come out fully functional human beings. Unfortunately, that was not the case with Mr. Humphreys. Mr. Ackers said Humphreys married and had five children, but the marriage declined and he turned to internet porn. He knew it was illegal, but that increased the excitement, recreating adolescent ideas about sex being wrong. There wasn't a desire to seek out children to take indecent images of them in changing rooms. It was more the fact that there were people in the next cubicle to him taking their clothes off who didn't know he was looking at them that made him aroused. He is not a predatory paedophile. Sentencing, the judge, Mr. Recorder William Ashworth, said he was not wholly convinced that Humphreys fully accepted things, as earlier in the week he had given no comment answers at a police interview about the offences to be taken into consideration. The judge said he considered jailing Humphreys, but he could receive little treatment to address his offending. He imposed a three-year community order, so Humphreys will take part in the three-year Thames Valley Sexual Offenders Programme with 84 sessions.
Let's have the story behind the second headline, please, Noel.
Yes, GPs consult on branch closure. Winchester doctors want to close a village surgery that villagers have been battling to save. GP partners at Friarsgate Practice and the NHS West Hampshire Clinical Commissioning Group are proposing to close Kingsworthy Branch. It is launching a 30-day consultation to hear views before March the 18th. Friarsgate is inviting patients to a meeting later this month. The Pound Road building, which caters for around 7% of Friarsgate patients, does not currently meet current building standards. It was closed for 2 months in 2015 for the City Council, the landlord, to complete essential maintenance. Even with the work carried out last year, the building still needs £35,000 worth of repairs to make it fit for purpose. Following 8 months' work by the GPs, the Local Patient Participation Group, City Council and West Hampshire's CCG, a number of options were investigated. A public meeting in October considered whether new premises could be found or that a new surgery could be built from scratch. Both options were popular, but the GPs say neither is viable. No suitable premises have been found, and financial pressures make it difficult to justify the investment required to build new premises for less than 2,000 patients. More and more patients have found the surgery in Week, 3 miles away, to be a handy alternative. It has modern facilities with extended opening hours. In a statement, the GPs and CCG said, "We recognise this proposal may cause concerns about how local patients in the area, particularly the very elderly, will be supported in the event of closure." Dr. T.J. Stannard, senior partner at Friarsgate, said, "We're not putting forward this proposal lightly. However, after a considerable amount of work looking at the different options, we believe that this proposal is the only viable solution." Steve Bryan, MP, said, "It is an understatement to say I'm disappointed, especially as I know the news will cause a great deal of worry among elderly residents. I've liaised closely with the Friarsgate partners and the local NHS and cannot, in all truth, say they've done anything but treat this with the attention it deserves. They have worked so hard to explore every possible way we can keep safe primary care services in Kingsworthy, but it doesn't appear to have proved possible, and they are right to use NHS resources in the most effective way possible." County Councillor Jackie Porter said, "I'm absolutely disgusted. The Worthies and other areas that are served by that surgery have such a great number that they deserve a doctor's surgery. They've been running it down for years, and they keep saying it has to be improved."
And let's have the third headline story, please, Jane.
And the third one is support worker jailed. A Winchester woman has been jailed following thefts from vulnerable adults with learning difficulties in Alton. Jane Raymond, 48, of Firmstone Road, Winnell, was sentenced to 14 months in prison at Winchester Crown Court for stealing money from vulnerable adults with learning difficulties. She admitted two counts of theft and was sentenced to 14 months in prison for each offence, which will be served concurrently. Between 2008 and 2014, Raymond, who was at the time known as Jane Rogers, was employed by MenCap and subsequently the Affinity Trust as a support worker for vulnerable adults with learning difficulties. The court was told that she repeatedly stole money from the adults she was supporting by using their bank cards. Raymond withdrew money and then purchased items for herself. The court heard it was a serious breach of trust. One victim, a 40-year-old man from Alton, had £13,467 taken from his account, which almost resulted in him being evicted from his house for rent arrears. Following the sentencing, investigating officer DC Andy Spooner said Raymond was targeting people who relied on her for support. DC Spooner added, "By taking advantage of vulnerable adults, she abused her position of trust and showed total disregard for them."
And that concludes the headline stories. So we now go on to death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor. Your Say, Historical Items, First Person, Belgarum Diary, and editorial comment. I'll start with the death notices. Bernstone, Jake Bernstone, in hospital after a short illness. Emery, Philippa Helene Emery, peacefully at home, aged 41. Hedworth, Andy Hedworth, in the Countess Mountbatten Hospice, aged 63. Hembra, Josephine Kate Hembra, peacefully aged 83 at her home. Jubb, Paul Jubb, peacefully at home, aged 70. Lockyer, Elizabeth Pearl, nay Norris Lockyer, peacefully after a short illness. And Sanford, Leela Mary Sanford, peacefully at home. Slater, Margaret May, nay Macy Slater, peacefully in the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 93. Thompson, Brian Leslie Thompson of Eastleigh, aged 74. Wolford, Terry Wolford. And finally, York, George Courtney York. And now we have Christian comment, and it's read by Shirley.
Yes, this is headed Lent, Stopping the Spiral of Desire. Like David Bowie's last album, Clive James's latest collection of poetry is written under the shadow of mortality, and their words poignantly search for meaning. James sees how we easily identify with who we are, with what we do in Manly Ferry, concluding with, "If I can't work, let me be broken up," like the redundant ferry about which he writes. It is a shocking image, and one which is so easy to accept. We are defined by our job and what we conspicuously consume with our earned income. However, perhaps a high watermark has been reached for consumption, with IKEA predicting peak stuff. How many more furnishings does your home need? And Apple's sales plateauing. How many Apple devices are already in your home? Consumption is traditionally seen as a good thing, summed up by Gordon Gekko's iconic 1980s statement, "Greed is good," in the film Wall Street, and the mantra that economies need growth. Perhaps our age is more Fight Club, where Tyler Durden asks, "Advertising has us chasing cars and clothes, working at jobs we hate so much so we can buy rubbish we don't need." Perhaps we're beginning to perceive that the emperor of economic orthodoxy has no clothes. Christian orthodoxy sits light to accumulated possessions, as reflected in the story of creation. Firstly, God rested on the seventh day and created a Sabbath economy with its weekly cycle of rest. This was not because of tiredness, but because it was good. Good to reflect upon the wonder of creation and to cease from the destruction of toil. Later in the creation narrative, and recoiled by the Apple logo, humankind gives into greed. There was abundant fruit in the garden, but Eve is seduced by the serpent whose promotion skills would have put Suchi and Suchi to shame. Desire is awakened in her, and forevermore humankind has been locked into a life of toil. Desire becomes Desire becomes our drive and master. As Slavoj Zizek says, desire's raison d'etre is not to realize its goal, to find full satisfaction, but to reproduce itself as desire. This spiral of desire is ruining our planet and our societies, with wealth and power disparities. Lent is traditionally the season for breaking the cycle of desire, for saying my choices won't be made on the basis of momentarily satisfying lusts for possessions, drink or food. Choices will be made on the basis of the needs of others and the need to spend time breaking desires' hold. We start Lent by recalling that Jesus was unable himself to minister until he confronted his desires in the wilderness. We conclude Lent by remembering that even the desire for life itself was laid aside on the cross. Clive James's enforced Sabbath, his rest through illness, demonstrates the wonder of the world around us, as in Japanese maple. So much sweet beauty as when fine rain falls on that small tree. David Bowie's album recalls both hope in death in the song Lazarus, but also in the existential loss. It's his only album where he does not appear on the cover. May you find Sabbath contemplation this Lent. And that was written by the Reverend Paul Kennedy.
And we're going to continue with letters to the editor. Now, if you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. The email address is news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. And the written address is the editor, 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO238AL. There are 9 letters this week, and we'll start with one read by Noel.
Yes, this first one from Peter Rees is headed Tory Disaster. Sir, the disaster is not Silver Hill, but the incompetent Conservative administration. First, in desperation plus poor advice, you sell a contract you haven't got the staff to administer and monitor to the lowest and only developer. Secondly, you choose not to vilify the greedy developer, but your own intelligent and critical party member. Thirdly, you disregard the outcome of a thoroughly comprehensive judicial review by a High Court judge who finds multiple errors arising from poor oversight and administration. You then carefully select an independent, respected and eminent person to conduct a review. You elect your own party into government, who then completely eradicate local planning functions and local authority staff, giving a complete free-for-all to developers. You ignore advice, and with overwhelming arrogance, you withhold confidential information required by your own scrutiny committee. The independent review and reviewer is completely rubbished, despite the incontrovertible condemnation of politicians and officers over 10 years. You then blame others and take no responsibility whatever. This administration holds the people of Winchester in total contempt. Tory councillors are completely and utterly out of their depth, unable to cope with the magnitude of Silver Hill's contractual and legal situation. They have culled staff and deliberately curtailed the right of public access to information. They represent a government that is hell-bent on eradicating the function of democratic local government. They favour global and corporate conglomerates, completely ignoring the voices, opinions, contribution and lives of local people. They are a complete and utter shambles, not deserving one single vote. There is not an iota of sorrow, guilt, responsibility or acknowledgement of corporate culpability from this defunct administration. A wonderful opportunity has almost been destroyed. They should be utterly ashamed of themselves and their party. Do not vote for them again. Let the local electorate they clearly despise so much choose worthy and competent successors immediately. Silver Hill is still an excellent regeneration scheme, deserving skilled professional project management, but not in the hands of this administration. Peter Rees, Winchester Labour Party, Monarch Way, Winchester.
And this letter from Pip Billington is accompanied by a photograph of Blue's Sandwich Shop, Fresh Food for Thought, which says Blue's Sandwich Shop on Southgate Street closed after trading for more than 10 years. And is headed, "We must support small businesses." Sir, I'm disappointed to see that Blues, the independent sandwich shop on Southgate Street, has given up the ghost. Hardly surprising, given the arrival of Subway opposite. How could Blues compete with a global entity that doesn't pay proper UK taxes? What can we do about it as a community to support independent businesses? Firstly, avoid global food and coffee shop chains who do not pay UK taxes. And secondly, become a fair tax town. Small businesses in Crickhowell in Wales are embarking on a mission to copy the techniques used by the multinationals, setting up a DIY tax avoidance scheme. Anyone interested can watch The Town That Took on the Tax Man on BBC iPlayer. The idea is not to avoid tax, but to threaten HMRC with the idea that if they don't close the loopholes through which these huge corporations crawl, then all small businesses will club together and join them. And that was from Pip Billington of Kingsgate Road, Winchester.
And this one from Jock MacDonald is headed Independent Day. Sir, I very much want to express my appreciation of three letters in your edition of February the 11th. Letters written on the one hand by Tim Fell, Rachel Marcus and Mike Caldwell, and on the other by Karen Barrett and George Hollingberry. I agree with the former group and think that the time is now ripe for having independent people as councillors. I feel just a little guilty that in a very different era, I was a member of a national party when I was elected as an SDP councillor in 1982. But it was in 1973, when local government was reorganised by Ted Heath, that national government became so prevalent in our local politics. Besieged as we are at every level by new threats, we need people who can think for themselves in a rational manner rather than relying on so-called party politics. Karen Barrett and George Hollingberry really do think things out for themselves, though they have Labour and Conservative allegiances. Mrs. Barrett's recent letter is arguably a bit too combative in a party political way, but her other posts, including articles in the Mid Hampshire Observer, are sheer intelligent gold. Mr. Hollingberry's letter from Westminster, like things he has written on his website, is informative, well argued, and shows leadership in the tangle of political and environmental crises that encircle us all. It would be great if this were the case with all our local politicians. Once again, Winchester deserves better. And that was written by Jock MacDonald, Stockbridge Road, Winchester.
And another similar letter, headed Silver Hill Query. Sir, having digested the sobering conclusions of A Perfect Storm, Claire Lloyd-Jones's report on the calamitous Silver Hill debacle, Winchester voters should remember the statement reported in the Hampshire Chronicle 1 year ago by the then leader of the council, Councillor Frank Pearson, that it would be unreasonable for officers to be held accountable if the review finds that they give bad advice. February 26, 2015. We disagree. A key question to be addressed in the Silver Hill post-mortem is how far officers should be held to account for the council's failures around the development process. While political control of the council may have alternated over the years, the senior officer team remained the same and provided the common thread in the policy making. As members of the Hold the Officers to Account group, that's HOTA or HOTA, we now strongly recommend to our fellow voters that in the forthcoming city council elections, they question candidates of all parties and none about their intentions on this matter. Are the officers to be held to account for their role in the Silver Hill mess? Or is their performance to be glossed over despite the cost and the waste of almost two decades? A more vigorous and challenging elected membership of the council is now vital. How candidates respond to this challenge will tell us a lot about their qualities. Those who lack an appetite for this important task can be dealt with in the ballot box. The performance of officers needs to be dealt with, if appropriate, through the normal disciplinary processes by those we elect as our representatives in May. And that's from the HOTA group, campaigning for a more accountable council, Edward Fennell, John Andrews, Nigel Bradshaw, Julian Chisholm, Jill Davis, Jonathan Greatrix, Caroline Scott, Tony Walker and Martin Wilson, care of Egbert Road, Hyde.
And Peter Hargreaves writes, NIMBY Councillor. Sir, Councillor Kim Gottlieb wears the hat of a people's champion after successfully leading the campaign to stop the proposed Silver Hill development and winning a judicial review against Winchester City Council. He rightly argued that the Silver Hill development was poorly designed, the buildings oversized at 6 and 7 stories and would tower over the city. Strangely, wearing his other hat, with his London and Bath estates and joint developers Galliard Homes, he was planning to build a 50-metre-high building at Chiswick Roundabout, dubbed the Octopus. The planned building is to be covered with a grotesque 3D advertising boarding that would reach out and respond to views in all directions. The planning has horrified local residents, but then the developers decided that the original proposal was too modest, and what was really needed is something 3 times higher at 42 stories. The building will be the tallest for miles around. The new proposal is 36 stories higher than the proposed Silver Hill development, and according to local residents, would be a disaster. It would seem that for Councillor Gottlieb, it is a case of anywhere but not in my backyard. When questioned by Private Eye, Councillor Gottlieb claimed there was no inconsistency in his approach and it's all about creating a landmark. And that was from Peter Hargreaves, Worthy Lane, Winchester.
And this is headed Sad Spectacle, and it's written by Patrick Davis. Sir, what an extraordinary spectacle at the overview and scrutiny meeting last Wednesday evening. There was a packed public gallery keen to hear how the City Council would respond to the scathing report from the independent investigator Claire Lloyd-Jones into the Silver Hill fiasco. Instead of a measured and serious discussion on the issues raised, what we had from councillors was chaotic. Several Tory councillors read out prepared scripts seeking to justify the way the City Council had acted. This appeared to be a coordinated attempt to undermine the integrity of the report. Who organised this exercise? A Lib Dem councillor constantly interrupted other speakers without being called by the chair, and then tried to amend the investigator's report with his own preferred wording, a vanity exercise which would have achieved nothing. When Councillor Janet Berry, the Labour leader, reasonably moved that the committee should accept the investigator's report in full, this was defeated in a vote. No serious attempt was made to answer the significant contributions from the members of the public who had followed all the issues involved over several years. At the meeting, I pointed out that all the detailed discussion on dramatic changes to the Silver Hill scheme had taken place at many secretive reference group meetings in 2013 and 2014. In my view, this method of working is one of the root causes of the problem. This has been a regular device by the council to avoid the public being able to keep track of what is being done in our name. The council needs to get back to all meetings being held in public unless clear and specific reasons are given for privacy. Even then, the public are entitled to know that meetings are being held and what is to be discussed. In the time since I was a city councillor, the council has spawned a proliferation of numerous informal groups meeting in private, discussing important local concerns. In future, these must be held in public at properly held committee meetings, with papers produced in advance and available to the public. Patrick Davis, Staple Gardens, Winchester.
Paul Twelvetree says road must stay. Sir, in his letter, Chronicle, February the 4th, Roger Malin states that he doesn't think that when the Andover Road is closed and traffic backs up from the new Barton Farm estate, that it won't divert through Littleton and Harestock and then into Wheak and the Stockbridge Road and use it as a rat run. What other route into Winchester can it possibly use to bypass the unavoidable traffic delays? I've been campaigning to keep the Andover Road open for some time, and I'm glad to say the vast majority of people agree with me that Andover Road must be kept open. Nearly 1,000 people have registered their support by emailing me at andover.road.petition@gmail.com with less than 20 disagreeing. As for building a sympathetic dual carriageway through beautiful countryside, blighting Littleton, Crawley, Sparsholt, Hursley and Otterbourne with link roads into the Andover, Stockbridge and Romsey roads, I can assure him it's not anything I will be getting my teeth into, ever. Paul Twelvetree, City Councillor, Littleton and Harestock Ward.
And Elizabeth Thorne is back to Silver Hill with Scheme Will Fail. Sir, now that, we hope, the disastrous and ill-managed Silver Hill scheme is finally to start again from scratch, I hope that everyone can see that it was bound to fail as the scheme is just too big. Apart from the City Council and County Council offices, I don't know of any other big schemes that were forced into Winchester during the 20th century. Other developments have been much smaller and done in a piecemeal fashion, as seems to be the Winchester tradition. No regard seems to have been paid to what the city actually needs. We know that some cheaper accommodation with a district heating system and a new bus depot are needed, but we don't need any more shops when some are standing empty and more will be soon because of the internet. Something we definitely do need, though, is a proper market space, preferably covered, like Wimborne Minster, making the market a destination in itself, rather than something that clogs up the narrow high street as at present. This time, the councillors and officers must invite suitable people to enter a competition for sections of the area, or the whole thing if we have to, and when a truly suitable scheme is agreed on after proper consultation with the public, then the development should be put out to tender and handled in a correct manner, or we will continue to make no progress. And that was from Elizabeth Thorne, Airlie Lane, Winchester.
And on a different subject altogether, Ian Dennis writes, and it's headed, History of Football. Sir, some readers of last week's Hampshire Chronicle, February the 11th, may have been interested in the article relating to the early history of football at King's Worthy. As mentioned in the piece, as part of my PhD studies, I am currently conducting historical research exploring Winchester's footballing heritage, focusing in particular on the period between 1870 and the outbreak of the First World War in 1914. If any readers have any photos, journals or other artefacts relating to local football during this period, especially any details of the footballer and former county councillor Arnold Tebbutt, 1859 to 1940, I would be extremely grateful if they could contact me by telephone on 0771 777 3834. I'll say that again, 0771 777 3834, or by email at i.dennis.11@unimail.winchester.ac.uk. And that was from Ian Dennis, Cerne Abbas, Dorchester, Dorset.
And that was the last letter for this week. Thank you to all of the contributors. And now we are going to have your say. We asked members of the public, a very controversial thing, and This week it is, with Stephen Fry quitting Twitter over online backlash to a risque joke at the BAFTA Awards, are people too easily offended? Noel has the answers.
Well, no. Mary Mills, 51, secretary of Hyde Street Hyde, said, "I think sometimes older people in Winchester are, because they're old school. They're signing up to Facebook and getting in a lot of arguments." And Robert Fellows, 67, retired of Sheridan Close Stanmore, said, "Oh, you can't afford to say anything about immigrants or black people in this country anymore. It just annoys me. It shouldn't offend people," something like what Stephen Fry said. And Anna Schrammeck, 19, au pair of Berwick Avenue, Week, said, "People are really offensive, so it's okay to be offended. There are people like the rapper Kanye West. He's really offensive." And Tom Pierce, 26, dustman of Willis Way, Kingsworthy, said, "It's a good and bad thing. People have now got a wider platform for anything they say, but there's a point where we should apply the brakes of common sense."
And now we're going back to the mists of time through our dusty old files for historical news items. And we'll start with 25 years ago, starting with Shirley.
Right. 25 years ago, from February 1991. And it's headed Sun Lane Problems. Parking in Sun Lane is still causing concern to Oresford Parish Council. The chairman, Mrs. Barbara Griffiths, reported that letters had been written to both the Winchester City Council and the Hampshire County Councillor. The council had replied to the effect that the situation had recently been investigated. Parking had been confined to the west side of the road, and the carriageway marks had been laid correctly. There did not appear to be a problem when they investigated, but the situation would be monitored over the next few weeks. And then the second part of this, headed Paradise Lost. Stranded. That was the unhappy position of three young women who paid thousands of pounds for round-the-world trips that should have started tomorrow, but now won't, because a Winchester travel company has gone bust. Diane Waters, Jill Bull and Louise Smith discovered 3 days ago that Paradise Travel in Jewry Street had ceased trading. Diane, 24, from Kingsworthy, Jill, 19, from Hursley, and Louise, 21, from Surrey, had each paid £2,000 for their plane tickets last October. They also paid £374 for insurance last week. The company must have known when they took this money last week that they were going under, Jill said.
And now we're going back 50 years. Over to you, Noel.
February 19th, 1966. There are two items. First is headlined Fire Service Changes. Hampshire County Fire Service is a definite loser on the deal it has made with neighbouring fire authorities for over-the-border fire calls. And several members of the County Council Fire Services Committee are concerned at the cost to Hampshire ratepayers. As a result of criticisms expressed at Wednesday's Winchester meeting of the committee, the county chief fire officer, Mr. A.E.R. Ashhill, is to present a detailed report on the situation to the next committee meeting. At present, Hampshire is one of 11 county fire authorities in England and Wales, which does not levy charges under the 1947 Fire Services Act for assistance to neighbouring counties. And the second item, called Badger Farm Refused, is quite amusing in view of current controversies. It says, "Access to the proposed residential development at Badger Farm, Winchester, provided the major dispute between the development companies and the local authorities when a public inquiry into the Hampshire County Council's refusal to grant permission for development opened in the Winchester Guildhall on Wednesday. All three councils involved in the inquiry, the Hampshire County Council, the Winchester City Council, and the Winchester Rural District Council, refused permission for the development on similar grounds and decided that one of the conditions of development should be for it to take place off a Western distributor road.
Let's go back 100 years now, Jane.
And two items from 100 years ago, February the 19th, 1916. Hampshire's snubbed. Gallantry of the Hampshires. The following is an extract from a letter received from an officer of the RFA 10th Division with the Salonika Force. We did not mind the fighting part so much, but the cold was simply awful, 15 degrees below zero. Even the coat I had on under my Macintosh was frozen. Also, we were on half rations as it was so difficult to get one's food up the mountains. We lost 8 guns, but it was either getting our guns away and sacrificing the infantry or firing all our rounds and letting the infantry get away. The Hants were the best of the infantry, and I see we're not even mentioned in the paper. And secondly, doctor prosecuted. Dr. Ashkenny, Assistant County Medical Officer of Health, was summoned for assaulting Mrs. Lambden of Overton on November the 17th and pleaded not guilty. Prosecuting Mr. T.E. Longman of Andover said that on November the 17th, defendant was at Overton School examining children. He, having excluded the girl, Hilda Lambden, for being verminous, Mrs. Lambden considered it her duty to go at once and inform him that her daughter was perfectly clean. Defendant denied that such was the case, and when complainant told him that he was not telling the truth, he, Dr. Ashkenny, tried to turn her out and threw her into the porch.
Now it's 200 years ago. Over to you, Shirley.
This one also for February the 19th, 1916, is in two parts. The first one is headed, Lady Seduced. We are sorry to have to present our readers with another instance of those numerous infidelities which have of late so much disgusted the public. On Friday, eloped from her friends in the neighbourhood of Palace Yard, Mrs. L., a lady much admired in the circle of fashion. The particulars of the seduction, which we understand to have been of the most artful kind, as the lady was peculiarly decent and correct in her deportment, have not yet come to our knowledge. The lady, as we are informed, is somewhat past the prime of life. And this one is headed, Newspapers Banned. A letter was received in town from Paris on Saturday last, which says, it appears the government is decided on not avowedly suppressing the introduction of English newspapers into France, but to tax them so exorbitantly at the post office that it amounts, in fact, to a prohibition. Formerly, the diligence conveyed them in packets from Calais, and each journal was delivered at the moderate charge of 2 pence. At present, they are weighed as letters and must be paid as high as 6 and never less than 4 livres, 10 sols, a paper.
And we're back to the present because it's first person. And this week it's by George Hayter and it's read by Noel.
And George Hayter headlines his article, Staying Slim is Small Beer. When I got myself a job in a pub at the age of 16, it was destined to have a big influence on the way I drink beer for the rest of my life. The Cat and Fiddle on the A35 just past the New Forest near Christchurch was one of the loveliest pubs in Hampshire, although since then, like many pubs, it has been turned into a restaurant. For my first 2 summers in this grown-up thatched idyll, my school holidays job consisted of collecting empty glasses and putting them through a primitive dishwasher behind the bar, because I was too young to be legally allowed to serve alcohol. The lifetime influence on my beer drinking came from the pub's affable Cockney landlord, Bill Price. I admired Mr. Price not only because he was discerning enough to give an unpromising youth such as me a prestigious job in his popular pub, but also because he drank beer with great style. He spent hours propping up the public side of the bar, charming the regulars and nursing a bottle of Brickwood's light ale. He usually mixed it with a Brickwood's bitter, but it was his light ale methodology which impressed me. Constantly he poured small amounts from the bottle into his glass to maintain a perfect head of froth, never flat, never too frothy. It was an art. For about 4 summers I worked in the Cat, graduating to barman when I reached 18, and always drinking light ale just like Mr. Price did, tilting the glass at 30 degrees and using the slope inside the glass to gently replenish the drink without the head getting too gassy. In adulthood, many of my contemporaries adopted the pint of bitter as their pub prop, but I stuck with light ale, always decanting it from the bottle in tentative tilts to maintain a perfect froth. With only half a pint, I was rebel as well as a wimp. I was defying the drinks and advertising industries. But that didn't stop me developing Mr. Price's art. I began asking bar staff for a wine glass to add further sophistication to the light ale ceremony. As well as the joy of tasty sipping from an elegant glass, I felt gratitude that I was not developing the paunch which burdened many of my pint-drowning companions. I still felt the pressure to conform with the pint-minded majority, who continued to equate volume swallowed with manly status. Excessive male girth can often be traced to the calories in beer and the calories in the snacks for which beer generates an inflated appetite. Last month's tightening of the government guidance on alcohol consumption effectively halved the recommended maximum to 14 units per week. A unit is roughly half a pint of beer, a glass of wine or a shot of spirits. I hope the new guideline is part of a trend towards the lower alcohol consumption of past centuries, when beer and wine were weaker than today. Every adolescent boy will come to a fork in the road to manhood. One road leads to pints and probably a paunch, the other to no pints and probably no paunch. When I arrived at the fork, I had no problem choosing no pints, not just because of Mr. Price's example, but also because English bitter always tasted to me like sour vinegar. I'm not saying I'm right. When I see men with the waistlines of cows toting their pints in the pub, I often envy their laughter and camaraderie, and their comfort in feeling part of a dependable circle of pint lovers. The truth is, I cannot drink a whole pint of water, let alone a whole pint of sour vinegar. By the way, what we used to call light ale or pale ale a Cat and Fiddle 50 years ago has now almost disappeared from sale. Instead, I now sup Peroni or similar.
Jane is now going to read an alternative look at the news, and it's Belgarum Diary.
And Belgarum has 4 little items this week. Firstly, Mike Capoce's Sisyphean Silverhill Ordeal. Spare a thought for Mike Capoce. Close readers of the Hampshire Chronicle will know that Mr. Capoce has been involved with the Henderson, THRE and the Silver Hill scheme. But Mr. Capoce was previously managing director with Thornfield, the developer who drew up the first proposal soon after the millennium. In fact, his links go back to the 1990s, when Thornfield first joined Stagecoach to redevelop the bus station. Had his efforts over some 20 years been wholly in vain? Time will tell. And that little one is accompanied by 2 different proposed drawings of the Silver Hill scheme. And then summer or snow on the way. Now we are halfway through February, our minds wander to think of blue skies and warmth of summer. However, these dreams have been dashed as the county has been preparing for the snow to hit with road gritters out in force. The white Christmas we all wished for is long gone, but a white spring? Well, that's still on the cards, even if it's not wanted. Winchester has been battered by bitter winds and cold rain this month, and many residents have looked to the skies and predicted snowfall. The Met Office has issued 2 weather warnings in the past couple of days, sparking scores of children to rejoice at the thought of a snowy half term. However, Belgarum believes that we will just be in for more rain. Sorry to be a Scrooge. Today there will be highs of 7 degrees centigrade and lows of 0 degrees. Friday, today, will have a high of 9 degrees centigrade and a low of 7 degrees centigrade. The weekend gets even warmer, with Saturday peaking at 12 degrees centigrade, with a low of 10 degrees, and Sunday will have highs of 11 degrees and lows of 4 degrees centigrade. The city was last covered in snow back in 2013 and was brought to a standstill. And then, well, at least Pompey's in Hampshire. As well as 1,000 emails a week, Belgarum has to deal with phone calls from PR people seeking coverage. Many seek attention for places outside the Chronicle area, such as Newbury in Berkshire and Portsmouth. At least the latter is in Hampshire. But the stupidest question was, do you cover Taunton? Taunton, by the way, is the county town of Somerset. And lastly, Runner is nominated for Blog on Fitness. A runner from Hampshire has been nominated for a major blogging award. Nikki Jones from Bishop's Waltham, who is pictured with Paula Radcliffe, set up her blog Fit and Nicks 2 years ago, and it has been shortlisted for a national running award. It charts her journey from fitness newbie to running half marathons. She is one of only 12 people nominated in the publications and online category. She said, "The blog has been pretty crazy, but so much fun." To vote for Nikki, go to therunningawards.com/vote.
And it's over to Shirley for editorial comment.
Right, this one is headed, "Rebellion is easy, but independence isn't." After years of campaigning against his own administration, Councillor Kim Gottlieb might be kicked out of the Conservative group at Winchester City Council tonight. Many from outside the district are surprised that the Silver Hill critic survived this long. There are plenty of councils where this would not happen. But that, perhaps, is a result of Winchester's gentle party politics. Cross-party consensus is desirable in many ways, but has, in the view of investigator Claire Lloyd-Jones, led Silver Hill down the road to ruin without effective opposition or scrutiny. Campaign groups calling for closer examination of major projects have identified a potential remedy to the council's ills, but will face an uphill battle to win seats at May's election. Councillor Gottlieb wants to remain a Tory and is tight-lipped on the possibility of running as an independent. He is surely aware of the challenges faced by those canvassing without a party. There were great expectations in 2002 for Winchester Landscape Conservation Alliance. The independent cohort who took on the council over development controversies of the day, but they failed to beat a single Conservative or Lib Dem in the polls and faded from memory. Things may be different, but council procedure is not a doorstep issue. Can the Silver Hill rebels sort out parking and collect the bins on time?
And I've got what's on for the week beginning Monday the 22nd of February. On Tuesday the 23rd of February at 4:45 p.m. there's an informal concert in the recital room at Winchester College. I'm afraid there's no more details about that. On Saturday the 27th of February at 7 p.m. Winchester Cathedral's Group Choir Festival is going on. The prices are £22 and £12, and there are concessions for seniors. And the number to contact for more details on that is 01962 857 275. And on Sunday the 28th of February at 11:45 a.m, there is an informal concert by the Winchester College Choristers in the Music School Hall. And again, I'm afraid there's no details from Winchester College. Saturday the 5th of March at 7:30 p.m, it's in St Cross Chapel, and the Twyford Singers, an 80-strong choir, will give an all-Purcell concert. And information and tickets for that is 01962 712 722. And a reminder that Open Sight, Hampshire's principal organisation for visually impaired people, is always available for help and advice on 023 8064 1244. Lighting Up time ends on Friday the 19th of February at 7:12 a.m. and begins at 5:26 p.m. On Wednesday the 24th of February, it ends at 7:02 a.m. and begins at 5:36 p.m. If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with a recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. And if there's a problem with your player, please try plugging it in and recharging before returning it as faulty. Now we're going to continue with more items of general news, starting with one read by Noel.
Yes, and this item gives the background to that editorial comment about Mr. Gottlieb and his problems with the Conservative group. And the headline is "Kim Faces Tory Axe." And the line is "Conservative group discuss axing Kim Gottlieb on Thursday after over his calls for officers to resign." Tory chiefs have lost patience with Silverhill rebel Kim Gottlieb and are poised to remove him from the group, the Chronicle can reveal. Councillor Gottlieb has angered party colleagues by calling on Winchester City Council's chief executive to resign in the wake of Claire Lloyd-Jones's damning report. A motion to withdraw the whip would have been considered at a Conservative group meeting last night. No doubt next week we will get the result of that. The Itchen Valley councillor has already taken his own administration to court and called for resignations over the council's unlawful handling of the city centre development. He again called on Chief Executive Simon Eden to quit on Friday and has told the Chronicle that Corporate Director Steve Tilbury should also consider his position. In the email sent to the chief executive, copied to councillors and seen by the Chronicle, Councillor Gottlieb said Mr. Eden was behind efforts to secure and distribute legal advice which Ms. Claire Lloyd-Jones and a High Court judge found deeply flawed. He said, "Rather than acknowledge its faults and respond accordingly, under your guidance, the council has rejected these two independent and far-reaching judgments. The reality, in my view, is that you were far more responsible for all of the council's actions, decisions and mistakes in this matter, and as such, your position as chief executive is no longer tenable." He turned his fire on Mr. Tilbury on Tuesday, telling the Chronicle, "I would have thought he should reflect on his position, given how Silverhill has ended up, and how it's been managed and now how it's been criticised." The Conservative group considered ejecting Councillor Gottlieb a year ago when he last called for Mr. Eden and Mr. Tilbury to resign alongside the then leader Rob Humby and Deputy Vicky Weston. The officials were unavailable for comment, but one cabinet member who asked not to be named said, "It's unprofessional and disappointing that he has called for a resignation without any substantial basis for it. Last time he did so, calling for the resignations of councillors Humbley and Weston, both were subsequently exonerated by the CLJ report. Kim should apologise and not cause further unnecessary damage." Councillor Gottlieb would not be drawn on whether he would run as an independent in May's local elections should he be dropped by the Tories. He said, "The idea of going independent has been suggested to me many times. I'm comfortable being a Conservative and that's how I'd like to continue representing my constituents." He added that his letter to Mr. Eden was a council matter, not a Conservative group matter. Meanwhile, a new group of prominent council critics has announced plans to run in the elections under the name Winchester Independents. Writing in this week's Chronicle letters page, the group has invited residents to a meeting next month to organise their campaign. A separate campaign, Hold the Officers to Account, HOTA, has re-emerged with calls for a more vigorous and challenging elected membership. I read that letter too earlier, didn't I? The largely Hyde-based group, led by Edward Fennell, has no plans to field candidates, but will lobby those running on the issue of accountability. Mr. Fennell was the driving force behind Hyde 900 and the search for the bones of King Alfred. Ms. Lloyd-Jones's report found that the council lacked effective opposition or scrutiny, leading to officers feeling obliged to continue with the authorities' original intentions.
And on a completely different note, we have Spitfire Flypast to honour 80th year. It is the iconic plane that took to the skies to defend the country during the Second World War. The beloved Spitfire was a huge part of the nation's victory in the Battle of Britain in 1940, as well as the city's history, with the wartime aircraft built in Southampton and also at small factories across the region. Now, residents will be able to see it back in the skies once more during a special flypast over the city on March the 5th. The plane is set to make an emotional flypass to celebrate its 80th anniversary and pay tribute to its creator, R.J. Mitchell, who designed it in Woolston. Southampton Airport, which is hosting the event, say it hopes the flight will celebrate the aircraft's past whilst looking to its future. The first prototype of the aircraft took off at the then Eastleigh Airport in 1936, and the flypast is designed to let enthusiasts and new fans alike get a glimpse of the plane with the distinctive noise of the Rolls-Royce Merlin engines. War veteran Nathan Foster, thought to be the world's youngest Spitfire pilot at the age of 18, will attend, along with RAF Air Cadets celebrating their 75th anniversary. Mr. Foster said, "I look forward to sharing some insights of learning to fly the Spitfire with the Air Cadets as we celebrate the 80th anniversary at Southampton Airport. I am delighted this event will pay respect to those that built and designed the Spitfire and feel honoured to be taking part in the celebrations." Members of the 2428 Hedge End Air Cadet Squadron will perform a guard of honour for the plane as it is wheeled out of the hangar. One lucky cadet will be invited to fly in a helicopter alongside the Spitfire on the day, and all cadets will have the chance to chat with Mr. Foster and the Spitfire pilot, Matt Jones. A 130-foot tribute to the plane could tower over Southampton's waterfront by autumn 2018. Plans have been put forward for the £4 million monument at Mayflower Park, and the National Spitfire Monument Charity says it will launch a fundraising campaign. A Spitfire is on permanent display at the Solent Sky Museum near Ocean Village in Southampton. And this article is accompanied by several photographs, including one of a Spitfire flying during the 75th anniversary flight over Southampton Airport, and the proposed memorial for the Mayflower Park of a Spitfire in Southampton.
James Atwell to retire as Dean. He has been Winchester Cathedral's leading churchman for nearly a decade. The Dean of Winchester, the Very Reverend James Atwell, 69, will retire in June after 10 years in office. He started in his role on March the 25th, 2006, succeeding Michael Till, and many in the community have praised him for the work he has done in his tenure. The role of Dean, among many things, is to progress Winchester Cathedral and keep it relevant within the area. He recently instigated a major restoration programme at the cathedral, which it is hoped will bring in more visitors. That has coincided with developing profitable events to pay for the great church's upkeep, such as the Christmas markets and the ice rink. The projects have not always been widely popular, and the charging of visitors to the cathedral remains a source of contention some 20 years after they were first introduced. The Dean also represents Hampshire on the national religious stage. "Leaving Winchester will be an enormous wrench," he said. "It has been a great privilege to serve as Dean of Winchester at a time of real opportunity for Winchester Cathedral. There is much development going on, both in the life of the cathedral and diocese. And although I'm sad to be leaving, I will do so feeling deeply encouraged by the promise and forward momentum that I see all around." Reverend Atwell's successor will be chosen by the Vice Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, Lindsay Fox. She has been appointed chair of the nomination panel. Mrs. Fox was put forward for the role by Reverend Tim Dakin, Bishop of Winchester, and the appointment was confirmed by the Archbishop of Canterbury. Bishop Tim said, "James has served with distinction as Dean of Winchester for the last decade, and I have very much enjoyed walking with him." And the article is also with various photographs, especially one with James Atwell and Tim Daking standing outside their cathedral, and also the Dean with Raymond Blanc at a workshop for Hampshire Fair.
And this item is quite interesting in view of the item I read from 50 years ago about the Hampshire Fire Service. It's headlined, 200 Fire Posts to Go. It's been described as the biggest change to firefighting in Hampshire for decades, writes James Franklin. Crews will soon be using cutting-edge new equipment to tackle fires, although more than 200 jobs are set to go over the next 4 years. Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service has published its budget, with the organisation finding £16 million of savings by 2020 due to funding cuts. Despite the financial constraints, the service plans to invest nearly £5 million on equipment that could be approved next week. Consultation on the budget was launched last year, with 1,467 people taking part, and plans to reduce crews at some stations proving controversial. Most of the service's 51 stations will see a reduction in firefighters over the next 4 years. But Chief Fire Officer Dave Curry said the public should not notice any difference in the service. Overall, 212 jobs will be lost if the proposals are approved, 60 posts full-time and 152 retained. Winchester will keep its two engines, and plans to cut the number of firefighters working during the night have been shelved. The number of firefighters on duty will drop from 19 to 14 during the day and night. Sutton Scotney and Bishop's Waltham will also retain one vehicle each, with firefighter numbers falling from 12 to 8 during the day and night. However, Mr. Curry said, there will be no enforced redundancies, no station closures, and our natural leverage rate will allow us to make those changes over the course of the 4 years. He said that many of the posts affected were already vacant, while others would come from natural wastage when firefighters retire or leave. Council tax for the service is also set to rise by 1.99% if the Hampshire Fire and Rescue Authority approves the budget at its meeting on February 24th. The service has also been working with other organisations to share some services, such as its control room IT, with neighbouring fire services. Plans to spend £4.9 million on new equipment that could revolutionise the way fire crews work have also been unveiled. A range of new vehicles would be bought, including smaller first response appliances that carry 2 to 4 firefighters and are designed to deal with incidents ranging from road accidents to building fires. There would also be intermediate engines that are also smaller than traditional appliances, but carry larger ladders and extra rescue equipment, as well as enhanced vehicles that are similar to current engines and would have heavy-duty equipment. Vehicles would also be equipped with medical equipment so firefighters can provide care, with the new vehicles described as more agile, enabling them to get to fires quicker.
Now we have Prison Project praised. Prisons Minister Andrew Salew praised the work of staff and volunteers during his visit to Spurgeon's Invisible Walls service at Winchester Jail. Mr. Salew met Ross Hendry, Chief Executive of children's charity Spurgeon's, which runs the Invisible Walls Family Support Service. His visit reflects the importance he places on strong family relationships in helping to reduce reoffending, and Mr. Salew was very interested in how the service helps fathers maintain their family ties whilst inside. Mr. Salew started his visit in the Visitor's Centre, where he met Spurgeon Service Manager Kerry Longhorn and the Invisible Walls team. He heard how the support offered by volunteers to children and family visiting is a key part of the services and helps ensure that the time spent together during a visit is as positive as possible. Mr. Salu spent time looking at comments left by families who had used the visitor's centre. He then went into the prison and met fathers engaged with the parenting support offered. He spent time talking to a group who were taking part in a Time for You and Your Child parenting programme. The programme considers the role and challenges of being a parent and the importance of understanding and meeting children's needs as they grow and develop. It aims to promote effective communication and encourage positive role modelling of behaviour whilst raising self-esteem and confidence as parents. The minister heard how much they valued the service and the chance to spend time with other fathers learning through their shared experience.
River Project sees return of wildlife. Parts of the River Itchen near Winnall Moors Nature Reserve have undergone a transformation to make them more wildlife friendly. Phase one of work in summer 2015 near the River Park Leisure Centre transformed an artificial sluggish canal into a more naturally meandering stream, improving the habitat for local flora and fauna. As a result, wildlife like herons, water voles and brown trout have been encouraged into the heart of Winchester. The three-year £45,000 scheme is funded by Winchester City Council and managed by Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust. Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust area head of conservation, Martin de Retuerto, said, "Over the years, much of the wildlife we associate with the world-famous River Itchen has been lost or driven out. A real shame for a city known for its beauty and unique location. It's been great to see wildlife brought into the city by our previous work and inspiring and exciting local people. The next phase will see similar works, including selected coppicing of streamside trees to allow more light on the bank margins, encouraging wetland plants to establish. This will provide cover for water voles and also encourage colourful banded demoiselles or mayflies to use the streamside habitat."
Winchester Council tax set for a sharp rise. Winchester's council tax is set to rise for the first time in 7 years. Civic chiefs have proposed ending their long-standing freeze to cope with a 34% budget cut from the government. Councillor Stephen Godfrey, leader of Winchester City Council, said, "They expect us to raise council tax. We want to maintain services at the level we have at least. So, at the moment, we're struggling to see how we can do otherwise." The district council tax rate and Winchester town precept, applying only to those in city wards, would each rise by 3.47% under plans set to be backed by the cabinet this week. Residents in Band D homes will pay £130.65 in 2016-17, up from £126.27 this year. Combined with the town precept and 4% rise at Hampshire County Council, it means those residents will pay an extra £48 per year. Chancellor George Osborne has ended bonuses to authorities who freeze council tax and has cut central grants on the assumption that rates will rise. Councillor Godfrey added, "Our grant from government has been cut by 34% this year because the government believe we should be raising money locally, and that's what we're trying very hard to do through our asset management plan and investment in our properties. Frontline services have been protected in the 2016-17 budget due to be supported by the Cabinet before review by Overview and Scrutiny Committee next week. Most council tax is paid to the County Council, which is responsible for education, transport and social services. And there's accompanied a big picture, lovely picture of the Guildhall, alongside a small picture of George Osborne looking very firm and authoritative."
And now, new Metro Mayor idea dismissed. "We don't want a mayor." That's the message from Hampshire's council leaders as they home in on the devolution of major powers from the government to the county. While ministers have been keen that Hampshire appoint a metro mayor, a local Boris Johnson, to head up a new combined authority, county chiefs say they do not see it as the right model for a large, diverse and extensively rural area such as Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. The devolution deal has been the subject of negotiations between the government and the councillors for more than a year now. The plans would see a new combined authority set up, which would be made of councillors and sit on top of existing councils. It would have power over how millions of pounds currently portioned out by government are spent on things such as skills, roads and new homes. And recently, councillors have expressed a desire for the devolution proposals to go even further, with local decision makers grabbing control over health and education budgets as well. The 15 councils, two local enterprise partnerships and two national park authorities, who have been combined for the bid, have been involved in the final stages of negotiations with ministers. The Winchester-based County Council, one of the leading negotiators, says further details have now been provided on low-cost housing, infrastructure funding, and how decisions are made at a local level. However, one measure they have refused to consider is the election of a metro mayor. The mayoral role, a major component of government devolution proposals across the country, would have seen a Boris Johnson-style mayor installed at the top of the combined authority with ultimate power over decisions. In a recent visit to Hampshire, James Wharton, the government minister responsible for devolution, had asked the county to agree that it should have a metro mayor. Elsewhere in the country, the Greater Manchester Combined Authority, the first set up, will elect a metro mayor next year, as will the West Midlands. However, it appears that Hampshire will not be joining them, as the bidding councils have told government they do not see it as the right option for the county. And this is accompanied, amongst other things, by a photograph of the very large Solent and South Hampshire region which would be covered by the mayor, and a picture of Queen Elizabeth Court, Hampshire County Council headquarters in Winchester, could soon be the centre of local government across the whole county.
Support for Sun Lane. Residents support a planning development for more than 300 homes in Alresford, according to the developer. Concerns have been raised about the site off Sun Lane, which is favoured by planners at the City Council and also by the Town Council as part of the local plan. At a consultation last Wednesday, developer Seawood Properties were bombarded with questions on the design of the houses and the local impact. Several people would create serious problems on inadequate roads, which would cause traffic congestion. The developers displayed different designs that they wanted locals to choose from. Seawood said they want the site to complement the area. Steve Culpett, Land and Planning Director at Seawood, said most residents were starting to support the plan. We have been talking with residents for nearly 2 years to construct a suitable plan, added Mr. Culpett. A full design has not yet been put together because we want to gather as much feedback from residents as we can before we do anything. We want their involvement to make this the best project it can be. We're not a big national company. We are small and local, and a lot of our staff live in the area. What we do will affect us too. Seawood says Sun Lane will benefit the area with a new industrial estate to replace the one in the Dean, 37 acres of new public open space and road improvements. John Weston of Jacqueline's Lane, half a mile from the site, thinks there are better alternatives. He said, I'm totally against it. I have looked at the plan in a lot of detail and have drafted up alternatives with the help of other Alresford residents. However, the Town Council has not looked at any of these alternatives. This is not right and only strengthens our objection. We have done as much as we can, and I do not think there is any other option but to object. The town and city councils, with Steve Opachik, head of strategic planning, says it has looked at alternatives, and Sun Lane is the best place to take most of the 500 homes the town requires up to 2031.
Zara's plea to sign up to register to save life. A Winchester student is leading a campaign for more donors from diverse backgrounds to come forward as she undergoes treatment for her own battle with leukemia. She's just 13 years old, but Zara Shaik is vigorously searching for a stem cell donor to cure her leukemia. However, she's found it harder than most to find a donor, as her mother, Karenza, is English and her father, Lua, is Iraqi. Zara, who's being treated at Southampton University Hospital, was diagnosed with myelodysplastic syndrome at the age of 11. This transitioned into leukemia. The King's School student of Nightingale Close, Winchester, went into remission late last year, but has now been told by doctors that the disease has returned. The only cure is a bone marrow transplant, and her mother, Karenza Shaik, hopes a donor can be found. She's such a brave girl and has so much strength you would never know she was poorly, said Mrs. Shaik. She takes every day as it comes. Even during the chemotherapy, she would always be smiling. We've been searching both nationally and internationally for a match, but have yet to find anyone. That is why I'm urging as many people as possible to sign up in case they are a match. If not for Zara, then for someone else who is also in need. Earlier this year, Zara decided to get her hair dyed blue before she started chemotherapy for a second time. She said this was a way of taking control of the situation and because she always wanted blue hair. Zara added, please come forward and register. It's really easy. You never know, you might be my match. If you'd like to register as a stem cell donor or for more information, please visit www.deletebloodcancer.org. That's all one word, lowercase. deletebloodcancer.org.uk, and this is accompanied by a really attractive picture of Zara between her mother and her younger sister, Zara with her blue hair, which delightfully matches a lovely scarf that her mother is wearing, big blue scarf with white stars on it, and Zara's own blue t-shirt.
Here we have shingles vaccine for 70 to 80-year-olds. Elderly people aged over 70 in Hampshire are urged to discuss having a shingles vaccine with their GP. Over the next 5 years, anyone aged between 70 and 80 can get inoculated. A common illness, shingles is caused by the same virus as chickenpox and can remain in the body for years, leading to chronic and severe pain. An episode of shingles typically lasts around 2 to 4 weeks. The main symptoms are pain followed by a rash. It is possible to have shingles more than once. Although the shingles vaccination is often offered at the same time as the annual flu jab, the shingles vaccine is available at any time throughout the year to eligible people. Marie McLaughlin, consultant in screening and immunisation of NHS England South, said, "You only need to be vaccinated once to enjoy long-term protection, and it is important to have the vaccine if you are eligible. We're asking people to contact their GP."
Plea to find poorly Harvey's owners. A freezing cold and sick Dalmatian has been found alone at a bus stop. The RSPCA has launched an appeal to find the owners of the dog, which is named Harvey, after he was found by a member of the public. Harvey is believed to be about 3 years old and was so weak he could barely lift his head or wag his tail and was suffering from diarrhea. After being discovered at the bus stop near Shedfield, common vets at Animed Veterinary Practice struggled to raise his temperature because he was so cold. The RSPCA has launched an appeal to find the owners of the dog named Harvey, who may be missing from owners in Wales. He knows his name and is microchipped with a registered address in Pontypridd. However, the phone numbers on the chip are not recognised. RSPCA Inspector Tina Ward is now appealing to the public to help trace his owners. And with this article, we have a picture of this lovely Dalmatian looking very sick and sad.
College tweaks arts proposals. A Winchester college has bowed to pressure from local residents over a controversial new building. Peter Simmons College has said it is now amending plans to change the location of its proposed arts complex. The complex, originally placed alongside Hatherley Road, was not well received by neighbours, sparking widespread protest. On Friday, the college wrote to residents informing them of this news and answered concerns that had been raised. One issue was the new entrance on Cranworth Road. Residents were worried the number of students funneled down the street would prove dangerous. In the letter, the college said, "Safety is of paramount concern to the college. We have engaged a traffic consultant to liaise with the local highway authority and Winchester City Council to ensure that the highway safety requirements are met. Currently, all access points to the college are shared by both vehicles and pedestrians. The new proposed entrance is a pedestrian-only access. It's the first step towards the segregation of vehicles and pedestrians entering the campus. The proposed building seeks to provide a new base for art, pottery, textiles, graphics, photography, and design and technology." Gunilla Jones of Cranworth Road said the new plans were a lot better but still needed work. "It's now much, much better for us now, as it is away from the boundary," said Mrs. Jones, whose house will be next to the proposed entrance. "It's what we definitely wanted, but some other residents on other roads may not feel the same way. That's understandable, as you'll never be able to please everybody. However, we would still prefer it on the site of the current arts block at the top of the campus. Our main concern with the original plan was the precedent that it would have set to build in that area. That would have been a nightmare. So I'm glad they have amended that aspect of the plan. Unfortunately, because of what has happened in the past, I do not yet believe a word of the letter. We'll have to see if the college is really willing to change the plans." As previously reported by the Hampshire Chronicle, more than 150 residents had supported a letter asking for the college to rethink the proposal.
And now, accused Matthew Hamlin denies murder. Matthew Hamlin takes the stand to be questioned about the death of Georgina Edmonds. Asked whether he murdered Georgina Edmonds, Matthew Hamlin said one word, "No." Taking the stand, Hamlin denied torturing and battering to death Mrs. Edmonds, 77, at her Riverside cottage at Brambridge near Eastleigh in January 2008. At Winchester Crown Court, Hamlin, 37, gave evidence before the 9-man and 3-women jury last Thursday and Friday. Asked by William Mousley, QC, defending whether he was the man seen on CCTV using Mrs. Edmonds' bank card at Tesco Express on Twyford Road, Eastleigh, on the evening after the murder, Hamlin again said no. The figure is seen wearing trainers and a full-length high-vis jacket. Hamlin said he had never worn that colour trainers or such a jacket. Mr. Mousley asked how the 4 days in custody had been in June 2010. He replied, "Hell. I could not eat or sleep. It wasn't a nice time. It was disbelief, shock. I was concerned for my mother, my family. I knew it would be all over the press. My career was ruined. Basically, they destroyed my life." The court saw CCTV clips of Hamlin in Eastleigh Town Centre later that day and into the evening. He said he could only remember it was just a typical Friday. Later, he was seen with a friend in Desborough Road, heading for the Chamberlain Arms pub. Hamlin said he was born at Winchester Hospital, but had lived most of his life in Bishopstoke, where he still lives. He went to Wyvern School in Fair Oak and Eastleigh College, with ambitions to become a jet pilot, dashed on medical grounds because of a damaged tendon in an eye. He worked in scaffolding before becoming an electrician about 17 years ago. Wearing grey trousers, a white shirt and striped tie, Hamlin said he had been in a relationship with Emma, a hairdresser, since 2004, and they have a son born in 2011. They married in December 2014. The jury has heard how Hamlin was tried in 2012 of the murder and acquitted by a jury. New DNA evidence prompted the retrial. This is accompanied by yet another photo we've seen many times of Georgina Edmonds, who had been murdered, and her beautiful little cottage and gardens next to the river at Brambridge.
Pupils get space seeds. It is out of this world. Pupils at John Keble Church of England Primary School are preparing to become space biologists, as they will be growing plants from seeds that have been in space. Back in September, 2 kilos of seeds were flown to the International Space Station on the Soyuz 44S rocket. After spending several months in space, they will return to Earth in March. The seeds were sent as part of Rocket Science, an educational project launched by the UK Space Agency and the Royal Horticultural Society's campaign for school gardening. The Hursley-based school will be one of 10,000 schools to receive a packet of 100 seeds from space. We are very excited to be taking part in Rocket Science, Bob Sanders, head of school at John Keble. This experiment is a fantastic way of teaching our pupils to think more scientifically.
And I'm afraid that's all we have time for this week. Thank you to our editors, Bill Argles, Irene Dowding and Jean Gardner. Thanks to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks, of course, to our readers, Shirley Parnell.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithfull, thank you for listening. Goodbye for now. And I hope you have an enjoyable week ahead. When you finish this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and please place the address label on the wallet too and return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you and goodbye again.